Chapter 20, A Date with the Indian Ambassador. On the Monday morning, after Jay and Ron's program, I went up to the Swami's apartment to see if he wanted me to do anything. "Yes," he said. "Today I would like to see Mr. B. K. Nehru. He is Indian Ambassador to the United States on short visit to San Francisco. You can drive me there?" "Sure," I said. "You know where he's staying?" "At St. Francis Hotel. You know it?" "Yeah, I think so," I said. "I'll have to check the address, but we'll definitely be able to drive there. Do you have an appointment?" "I have," the Swami said. "It is at 1 o'clock. "Okay," I said. "I'll make sure no one is using the Krishna car around lunchtime so that I can drive you there." We drove into the heart of the city's business district and parked in the loading zone at the main entrance of the St. Francis. The hotel's large glass doors were manned by a doorman wearing a flat-topped hat and a knee-length dark blue coat with brass buttons. Several other porters and valets were busy opening the doors of expensive-looking cars, a Mercedes, a couple of Rolls Royces, and a limo to welcome arriving guests. I felt out of place in my partially soiled green sports coat, slacks that didn't match, and shabby uncut hair. I realized suddenly that I didn't know what to do in this environment and hadn't thought ahead. Where should we park? Would the valets open the door of the beat-up old Krishna car for the Swami to get out? Would they let me go into the hotel wearing such clothes? The uniformed doorman stared at me as I slammed the spray-painted car door and walked up to him. "Good afternoon," I said, trying not to sound too helpless and uncultured. "The Swami has an appointment with Mr. Nehru, the ambassador to India. I was wondering if we could leave the car here with you if I give you the keys. We'll be about half an hour." The doorman bent down a little so he could get a good look at the Swami in the Krishna car. I knew how incongruous we looked together, the Swami aristocratic and exotic in his saffron robes, and me in my scruffy attire and decrepit vehicle. The traffic swept past the St. Francis, and I waited for him to ask me to leave the premises. "Certainly, sir," he said. He held out his right palm for the keys, all the while watching the Swami. "Go ahead, but don't be too long." He clenched his fingers over the keys and then dropped them in the deep pocket of his uniform. Phase one successfully completed, I thought. I opened the hotel door for the Swami, and we walked to the big marble counter of the glittering lobby. My heart was pounding, and I straightened up, trying to look dignified. "We have an appointment with Mr. Nehru," I said to the immaculately clad man behind the counter. "Certainly, sir," he said. "Top floor, penthouse suite." He gestured toward a bank of six elevators that stood on the other side of the lobby. The elevator was paneled, and the mirrors had a brass handle that ran around its circumference. I pressed the button marked penthouse, and up we went. The elevator door opened onto the marble-tiled entranceway. There was only one large double door to knock on, and I realized that the penthouse suite must have occupied the entire top floor of the hotel. The door was answered by a tall, debonair-looking man with gray hair. "Hello, Swami Bhaktivedanta," he said, holding out his hand. "I am Braj Kumar Nehru. Please come in." The Swami shook his hand. "Thank you," he said. "This is my assistant, Michael Grant." Nehru shook my hand, too, and led us down a cream-colored hallway that was lit up by a large chandelier hanging from the ceiling. Nehru looked very westernized in his dark three-piece suit. I was surprised he had opened the door himself. "Come into the living room and make yourselves comfortable," he said, opening the door for us. The living room was lavishly decorated with crystal chandeliers, thick carpets, and huge butter-yellow overstuffed chairs and sofas embossed with jacquard daffodils. Two of the room's walls were made of glass, and through them I could see the Golden Gate and Bay Bridges. The Swami sat on the end of one of the couches and motioned for me to sit at the other end. Nehru sat opposite us in one of the overstuffed chairs. A small, light-complexioned woman in a blue sari came into the living room, and Nehru stood to greet her. "This is my wife, Shobha," he said. Mrs. Nehru looked around. She half smiled at us and sat on the edge of a chair off to her husband's right. As soon as everyone was seated, the conversation switched into Hindi, which I didn't understand. I could see they were all more comfortable speaking their own language, and I didn't really mind being excluded from the conversation. I was tired, and my mind began to wander. Maybe it would look good to the Indian ambassador that the Swami has an American assistant, I thought. Maybe that was why the Swami introduced me by my legal name. I felt drowsy. I hadn't had enough sleep the previous night, and the drone of the foreign language lulled me into a kind of relaxation. In the midst of his Hindi, the Swami said my name and added in English, my assistant. I snapped to attention and saw the Nehru's nod and smile. I tried to look attentive and hoped I at least looked like I understood what was being said. The Swami's Hindi was peppered with English words, childhood, chemist, and steamship. He looked imploring and earnest as he spoke. "But one word from you," he said to Nehru in English, and quickly resumed speaking Hindi. I gathered that the Swami was asking Nehru for a favor. I thought his use of the English sentence was tactical. He wanted me to know he was asking for something, and he wanted Mr. Nehru to know that I knew. Nehru was a genial host, but he remained deadpan throughout the Swami's request. He said something in Hindi, and finally the Swami stood. Mrs. Nehru and I stood as well, and her husband led us back to the front door. "Thank you very much for coming," Nehru said. His wife said something to the Swami in Hindi and handed him a golf ball-sized object wrapped in aluminum foil. The Swami held out his right hand to accept it. "Thank you very much," he said to her, and dropped the object into his pocket. We all shook hands. "All the best," Nehru said. "Very pleased to meet you," I said. "And I you," the ambassador replied. "Goodbye." We took the elevator down to the lobby and walked out into the cold San Francisco wind. The Krishna car was still parked in the loading zone beside a sign that said, "No parking or waiting." The doorman handed me the keys. His eyes twinkled, but his mouth was firm. "You take it easy now," he said. "Thank you so much," I said. He continued to stand there like he was waiting for me to say something. "Thanks again," I said. It was only as I drove away that I realized he had probably been waiting for a tip. As we drove back to the temple, I asked the Swami about Mr. Nehru. He launched into a long, complicated explanation of how he was related to Jawaharlal Nehru, India's former prime minister. I didn't understand the family connection, and I asked him to explain it again. He did so in an even more convoluted way. Ambassador Nehru was apparently related to the late premier through a brother's wife's cousin's brother's daughter's uncle or something equally obscure. As the Swami explained it, it seemed to me like everyone in India must be related in some way to everyone else. "What were you asking him?" I asked. "I want to purchase a building for temple in San Francisco," he said. "Mr. Nehru could help me. Do you think he'll help?" "I don't think so," the Swami answered. He seemed unconcerned with the outcome of the meeting, not disappointed or upset at all. I didn't ask the exact nature of his request, and he didn't offer the information. "Why was Mrs. Nehru so light-complexioned?" I asked. "Is she Indian? She looked Western to me." "She is Parsi," he answered. "Originally, they are from Persia, but now live in India." He took the silver ball out of his pocket and unwrapped the gift Mrs. Nehru had given him. Inside was a date, the biggest I had ever seen. It looked delicious. "Oh, very nice," the Swami said. "It is medjool date." He took a bite out of it and handed it to me. I was surprised. No one had ever taken a bite out of a piece of fruit and given it to me. He didn't say, "Here, taste this. It's really good." He acted as though giving me a half-eaten date was a completely natural thing to do. I took the date because not taking it seemed a worse option. But as I held it, I realized I didn't really want it. The thought of another person's saliva made me shudder a bit, even though I used to drink out of other people's wine or whiskey bottles and even share a soggy joint or water pipe hose. Somehow I knew taking a bite was the right thing to do. Casting aside all thoughts of aversion, I bit into it, and it tasted great. I immediately forgot my initial hesitation. There was still about a third of the date remaining, so as I steered the car with my left hand, I held out the remaining part for the Swami so he could finish it. He looked at it and shook his head coolly and distractedly. I'd made a cultural faux pas, but I wasn't sure what it was. I quickly ate the rest of the date and wound down the window so I could spit out the pit. I was careful not to let any of the spit blow back into the car. We drove along in silence. I was tired. "How many hours of sleep should I have?" I asked. "You are feeling tired?" the Swami asked with genuine interest. "Sometimes," I said. He obviously hadn't noticed me drifting off on the ambassador's couch, and I was glad of that. "How many hours you are having?" he asked. "Usually five." You can sleep till you are refreshed. Somebody's refreshed by sleeping 4 hours. Somebody else is refreshed by sleeping 10 hours. Some of the devotees say we should have only 6 hours or less, I said. 6 is usually enough, he said. But when we arrived at our apartments on Frederick Street, I saw the Swami to his room and then went down to the temple to discuss the date incident with Shyamsundar. Oh, yeah, he said, when I told him what had happened. I read in the Srimad Bhagavatam that eating the remnants of your spiritual master's food is good for spiritual advancement. I think the Swami was giving you a gift, not just the other half of his date.